Chapter 52. The Saint of Patience stood up and crossed to her. She reached forward and took big, clawed fistfuls of his shirt.
I wanted it to be me, she said,
in this weird, unearthly calm.
I didn't want it to be you. I didn't want it to be you, Augustine, after all. The sin needed to be mine.
There's ours, he said unsteadily. If we drop through the river now...
We can watch our people die from close up, she said. The dead planets could have sunk out of orbit already. We just don't know. We don't know how long it takes to undo the resurrection. Millions of people. All those millions of our people. No. I had to do it. I am not very nice, Augustine. And I was never very good.
And for the first time, Ianthe's voice, which was sunk in a whisper.
Eldest sister, what have you done?
I killed Dominicus, said Mercy Morn. Killed the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, the ninth, and the first, though who cares about that? He is dead. He is gone. What he held together must now come apart. The sun must have died immediately, and those grey librarians will be the first to know about it. Then the seventh, and Rhodes. But every system that John ever put into place will cease. Every house may hear the dying cries of their life support, even as I speak.
Somehow I managed to say, we have to go get everyone out. Now.
There is no way, said Mercy, cool as death.
It was Ianthe, of all people, who said,
How can you say that? Will you not even try?
Dominicus will collapse in a few minutes, chick, said the other lictor. He too had the calm of a dying man. I only met that calm once, and it wasn't on a living human being. It was the calm on a dead girl's face, speared and mangled in a bed I'd told her to lie down in. It's going to form a black hole that nobody in that system will escape. The nine houses are over.
The nine houses are gone, echoed Mercy. It is over. It is done. We always planned for a mass evacuation, but I had my moment, and I took it. I took it, Augustine, and now I will die and face the river.
No, said Augustine.
Augustine, you promised me that after we did it, we would go somewhere and drop into the nearest sun.
That was when this was a fantasy, he said. There might as well have been no one else in the room. The saint of duty held burning embers in his palm, more statue than man. Ianthe was staring into space, looking like a child for all her height, little, bemused. I don't even want to know what I looked like. Augustine said, That was when the plan happened under perfect conditions. Conditions we never could have fulfilled, honestly. You took your shot, and you had to take it, and now the houses are dead. The resurrection beasts are still out there.
You cannot make me do this.
You have a job, Joy, he said. If you kill yourself now, you'll leave everything remarkably untidy, and that's not like you, is it? She said numbly.
That was not the agreement.
Bad luck, said Augustine. It's done. As you chose to stain your hands so mine could be clean, you're going to have to put up with the fact that you picked the wrong man to enter into a suicide pact with. I hate him. Christabel might have undone all my good work with Alfred, but here comes the reckoning. I'm going to go round up the ships, everyone who's left, sue for peace as best we can, get the Edenites on side. And then we'll find a place to fulfill the old promise. Somewhere out there exists a home not paid for with blood. It won't be for us, but it will be for those who have been spared. Babies always get born, houses always get built, and flowers will die on necromancy's grave.
Her throat was working. Augustine.
The lictor took her silently in his arms. They held each other like children who'd had a nightmare and had woken in a fright.
Just as silently, they detached. She said in a low voice,
"He was right. There can be no forgiveness."
"Then let us not seek out forgiveness, but forgetfulness," he said. "Bury me next to you in that unmarked grave, Joy. We knew that was the only hope we ever had, that we would live to see it through and pray for our own cessation. Oh, we'll still hate each other, my dear. We have hated each other too long and too passionately to stop, but my bones will rest easy next to your bones." Augustine raised his head for the first time to look out at his frozen audience, of which probably the most animated member was Kithorea's body, which my mum had completely abandoned. "No retribution, Gideon," he remarked. His face was deathly livid. His features were still, but his hands were not. "I thought you might want to burn on his pyre." I opened my mouth to speak. I was startled when the raw-looking man wearing my sunglasses said,
"No."
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't surprised, Augustine said, but also lying if I said I wasn't pleased. Here we three are at the end, Alpha, Beta, and Gamma. Gideon stared at the dead cigarette in his hands, and then he said,
"Well, Augustine, there's something you should know.
White light. It bleached the insides of your nose and the back of your throat. It hurt coming out your ears. It bled out your eyeballs. It wasn't a flash of light, more a suddenness. When it was gone, as though it hadn't even existed, but had been a luminous hallucination, time stopped. That light took colour from the room. Everyone was a slow-motion cavalcade of greys, of eyes caught widening, of mouths parting in stone-shaded articulations of shock. I'd tried to turn us around like there was a grenade to fall on, and then, in that thousand-shaded grey, I saw the red. Powdery particles were resolving in the air. They were emerging from my mouth, shaking free from Ianthe's hair. First a softly tinted pale colour like a sunrise pink, then deepening to cherry colour, then to deep scarlet. They floated in midair hesitatingly, and then inexorably travelled to one point like dust motes beneath a ray of sunshine. A great stripping wind blew through the room like a scourge, whipping those motes up in a crimson vortex. The powder became a grit. The grit became an aggregate. And then that hot red matter resolved into bone. It happened in an instant. It happened over a myriad. A wet red construct knitted itself back together, and then burbling out of its centre, a hot gush of pale pink meat and nerve, a lumpen squirting of organ, deep soft violets, fat stippled cerises, coils of intestine and gentle buff-shaded curves of bowel, white pops in each eye socket, bumps of sandy pearl stuff filling in behind, the twitch of a wet red tongue in a mandible spurting teeth, the percussive throbbing urgency of a heart, quickly hidden with a puff of bronchii sliding into big soft lung shapes, abruptly muscled over, then dressed with belated modesty in skin. The skin shading over with a fine coating of hair at the arms, at the chest, dark hair undulating over the eyebrows, making wrinkles and ruffles over the skull. The hot white jelly of the eyes was dyed black, as though oily drops had been squeezed into it, purling over in black shining wavelets, staining it true knitted ebony. The white rings bobbing up to the surface as though they'd been ducked into the water, each matte black pupil resting in the central point. The Emperor of the Nine Houses, the King Undying, the Prince of Death, the Necrolord Prime, stood behind Mercy Morn. He reached out with his naked hand. Her chest blew outward in a hot shower of ribs, meat, and diaphragm.
Her body stumbled forward. He tapped the back of her head. Something went crack, and the Saint of Joy fell face down before Augustine, whose chest was decorated with the desecrated remnants of her heart. The Emperor dropped to his haunches and eased the white robe off Mercy's dead shoulders. He shrugged his naked body into it, coyly pulling it closed, and he stretched his jaw in his mouth and wriggled the tip of his newly grown nose.
"Right," he said, and closed his eyes briefly. Then he said, "The sun has stabilized. Hope the sixth house didn't get cooked in the flare."
He rotated his shoulders like a prize fighter, and he said, conversationally,
"I never like cleaning house all at once, but it seems as though I have to, don't I? Let's make this very simple and very clear. I am going to ask each of you a question. If you give me the correct answer, you live. If not..."
He nudged Mercy's leg with his bare foot.
"You know what happens. I shouldn't have to do this, should I? This is seriously awkward and embarrassing, isn't it?"
Augustine pressed his lips together.
That was it.
God said,
"It was a lovely bit of work on Mercy Morn's part. She must have been training for thousands of years to bring that off. But I didn't get to where I am by being able to die, you know."
The lictor said,
"The resurrection beasts can't kill me."
"You acted afraid."
"Acted" is operative, but this is not an FAQ. Let's get a move on.
"Gideon," he said. Then he looked at us, gave a little crooked half-smile and said,
"Gideon, episode one, I mean. Gideon the first, third saint to serve me, my fingers and gestures." "Mate, I'm not mad about Wake. I'm not even mad that you failed to either fix or put down Harrow. I just want your loyalty. Do I have it or not?"
"You have my loyalty," said Gideon.
"Good. You stand on that side of the room. Yes, just there."
The Saint of Duty crossed to stand on the other side of the chair, away from Augustine, away from the two dead bodies, never even giving them a backward look. Then God said,
"Okay, Ianthe the first, eighth saint to serve me, my fi—"
"You have my loyalty," Ianthe interrupted.
"Choice," he said, as she crossed the room. "Obvious enthusiasm, great stuff. This is what I like about you, Ianthe. You don't hedge your bets. Now, can't ask Wake, even if I know what she'd say. It's a real pity you killed her, Gideon. I'd been planning on keeping her around. She had a lot to tell me, and why be an ass to the mother of your child? Speaking of..."
And he looked at us. I said, "You told that bastard to beat up Harrow."
"That was my job, after all."
God said,
"I was trying to save her.
Also my job."
"Go to hell, Pops." "This isn't a question for you," he said patiently. "You're my kid."
"Yikes. I'm not going to give you an ultimatum on our first day together. Let's talk about me and you later. I can't make up for all the years where I wasn't around to buy you hot chips and go to your school gala, but killing you to escape a messy relationship is a bit beneath me. Besides, that's not your body. I'd rather not punish Harrow for you acting out." We were tossed across the room, not hard. Your bones and meat came to a gentle rest next to Ianthe before I could even tighten your hands on the sword. Then the Emperor turned to Augustine. They faced each other without aggression. The Emperor looked like a man waiting in his bathrobe on the front step, greeting someone slinking home long hours past their curfew. Hot red heart's blood was splattered down the lictor's chest, running in rivulets into his robe, and some of it was speckled lightly over his face.
"Do I get the opportunity?" he asked.
"Yes," said the Emperor.
"You do. I didn't offer it to Mercy because Mercy really pissed me off, I'm sorry to say."
"Understandably," agreed Augustine.
"Augustine the first," said the man who was God, and the god who was man. My first saint, my first hand and fist and gesture. Will you swear your loyalty to me again? Clean slate, fresh start. Or not? He murmured. You said there was no forgiveness. I pardon him as God shall pardon me, said the emperor. Come, swear your loyalty, my son, my brother, beloved, lictor, saint.
Augustine lifted his eyes to the Lord. They were the same grey as they had been in the stopping of time. He looked at the blood on his front. He looked over the assembled group across the room. Me, jerking in your frozen skin. Ianthe, Gideon, at Kithareia's body in the chair. The collapsed body on the floor, Mercy Morn's hair tumbling close to his feet in rosy, bloodied tangles. He looked at the god of the nine houses.
No, John, he said.
And Augustine raised his hand. A nauseating plunge, like being thrown through the air, Harrow, the sickening weightlessness at the apex of a rising fall, the jolt before getting on that rickety old elevator down to the monument to the millionth power. A lamentation of ripping metal. There was a huge, bubbling whonk. We all tipped over to one side as the station listed. The chairs tumbled over. Kithareia's corpse tumbled too, no longer bound by the wrists to anything. And I could move your meat again, though it probably wasn't the greatest moment to move. The outside shutter ripped off the window, and I saw it. I saw the water. God had stumbled. He was pressed against the wall. Light flooded the room. Weird, unearthly, poppling light. Alarmed bubbles and rills of air flattened themselves against the plex window as the whole Mithraeum was driven into increasingly dark, brownish, bloody water. The plex buckled, shivered, then gave. The river burst through the window in a high-pressure torrent. The emperor was sucked out into the water, and Augustine dove after him, and Ianthe waded after him. Harrow, the only reason we weren't pulled out too was because I was yanked back into the muscular, lean beef arms of the saint who shared my name. He was wrestling me out of the gush as the station listed upward, you under one of his arms, him clambering into the foyer that was quickly angling upward as I held on to my sword. Fuck! Off, I bawled, affrighted. He said,
can you do necromancy?
No, I can't do necromancy.
Then come with me, he said.
The water surged and roared behind us. The saint of duty wrested open the door to the emperor's private rooms, slammed it shut behind us as we crawled out into a topsy-turvy corridor where a wash of water was already sliding down the halls from some trickle point. Another far-off moan of metal, a cracking, crushing noise. We scrabbled upward, ricocheted down the corridor. I followed him up a narrow passage, and then I stumbled and fell into him as the station listed another way, falling on a memorial that was now the wrong way up.
Outer ring, more stable, he said.
But
move, we're sitting ducks.
I moved. The station kept rocking back and forth as it was swept through the water, pressure nudging it back and forth from the sidelines. An alarm was wailing somewhere. I panted. The hell happened?
Augustine's dropped the whole station in the river, he said. We've crossed over physically, body, soul, everything.
And, irrelevantly,
wish he'd given me the packet.
What does that mean?
This, he said.
We'd reached another ring. The plex here was solid. The shutters had peeled up with the force of the drop, but the plex hadn't given, not yet, and we were tilting so far forward that we were nearly walking on the window. The river stretched out before us. Some light source from the station lit the water's gloom like a spotlight. We were falling fast and deeper. Sad, crunchy noises kept going off overhead, as though we were a suit of armour squeezed between enormous hands. The featureless river almost made it feel as though we were hanging still.
The only thing that gave context to our movement were the little figures in Freedive outside. Augustine and the Emperor, God, the man who'd contributed half of me, unknowing, wrestled as they sank, sucked down by some invisible slipstream. The water churned around them. Maybe it was some titanic necromantic battle. But up here, falling sidelong, the river water boiling away from their bodies, it just looked like they were punching each other. I saw the slim, trailing white ghost that must have been Ianthe diving down after. I said, "What do we do? Abandon ship? Swim to the top?"
"No," said Gideon. "Augustine's dropped us deep. I think we're already all the way down to the Barathrun. That's a long way from the surface."
"I can hold my breath."
"Funny. Breath's not the problem. You don't need to breathe in the river."
"So let's goddamn swim for it. I hate this."
"Listen to the station. Hear that creaking? There's pressure down here. It's not water pressure. It's the weight of whatever the river is. We never really knew. It'll get a normal person in seconds. You and I won't last much longer. And then there's the ghosts. Number 7's gone, so they'll be back soon."
The station listed again. I said, "Okay, you're a necromancer. Are you going to do something or what?"
"My necromancer is dead," said Gideon.
He took my sunglasses off his craggy, blasted face, and he looked down at me with eyes that would have surprised me first thing if I'd bothered to look at your memory files. They were a deep brown, with a kind of red spark to them. The brown of fractured rock glass all mixed in with dark pupil, eyes that gave very little away. They suited the face better than the scintillating green ones you'd last seen.
"He fought it alone for hours," said the stranger. "Then with some ragtag cavalry led by that mad sweetheart Matthias. They almost had number 7. Almost. Gideon never could walk away from a losing fight."
Before I could respond to this, they added,
"He and your mother alike."
"Why does it always come back to my mother?" I said, my voice rising to a squeal like an emptying balloon. "Who are you? How the hell do you know my mother, who seemed like a real dick, by the way?"
"My name is Pyrrha Devay," said the ghost in question. "Commander of the 2nd House, head of Trentum's Special Intelligence, cavalier to a dead lictor.
We compartmentalised from the eightfold word, just like you and your girl. Though I'm an accident, and he took more from me than got taken from you. I was able to go underground, even from him. 2 years before you were born, my necromancer started an affair with your mother, not knowing I'd also been doing the same thing, using his body." I said, "What the fuck?" "She was the most dangerous woman I'd ever met who wasn't me," said Pyrrha Devay. "You're right, though. She was a real dick." At this point, I was beside myself and more or less demented, so I kind of just squawked. "But what do we do?" "No idea, they, he," she said calmly. "I'd aim to get out of here alive, but our odds don't look wonderful. If we stay put, we get squashed or eaten. If we swim, we probably still get squashed or eaten. I heal quicker than a normal human being, but not that much quicker." Before I could just fundamentally lose my shit, Pyrrha suddenly sucked her breath in through her teeth and said, "That's your plan, Augustine." I pressed up to the plex. The river bumped into visual depth. We were in a huge gyre, lit by the furious electric glow from the falling station. Outside, another kilometre down maybe, was the pale belly of the river, studded with rocky promontories. And right at the bottom, the water was churning. The station tilted forward, and I could see clearly. A hole had opened. It was big enough to swallow up the whole of Dreaba and have room to spare. It was a huge, hideous, dark expanse, and it had seething, weird edges. It took the lights pattering over them for me to see that the edges of the hole were enormous human teeth. Each one must have been 6 bodies high and 2 bodies wide, with the dainty scalloped edges of incisors. The teeth shivered and trembled like the hole was slavering, and that hole had nothing in it. That hole was blacker than space. That hole was an eaten away tunnel of reality. And there, falling to its centre, wrestled the miniature figures of Augustine and the Emperor. Ianthe had separated from them somewhat, floating high above, though the nerve it must have taken to position herself above that tooth-serrated expanse forced me to reframe Ianthe Tridentarius in the wake of this absolutely galactic ballsiness. "The stoma's opened for John," said Pyrrha, and she sounded detached rather than triumphant, rather than grief-stricken. "It must think he's a resurrection beast." The Emperor was struggling. I would have thought he could have just dropped out of the river, done what he did to Mercy and blown Augustine to smithereens, but some kind of current was whirling them around like dolls. It seemed like it was all he could do to keep his position. Augustine had lashed them together somehow. He was wrestling the Emperor down inexorably toward that mouth. Overhead, the station crunched. The plex in front of us was making a little high-pitched squealing sound. Over and over, Augustine and God rolled in the water, and then the tongues emerged. A blast from the hole. The water boiled upward in huge, bloody-looking bubbles. Streamer-like lingual tentacles emerged, the unassuming pink you got on normal non-hellbound tongues, easily 1,000 of them, jostling, questing, blindly thrusting up out of that mouth. Pyrrha flinched. They were writhing together, wild and excited. The current swirled in an agitated pandemonium. There was a massive, sickening jolt, and the Mithraeum started to slide again, forward, tilting, sliding. "We're in the current now," said Pyrrha calmly. "We'll be pulled in, if the mouth doesn't close." I said, "Does this not worry you? Shouldn't we do something? Shouldn't we be, I don't know, getting the fuck out?" "I have been trapped in the back of a brain for 10,000 years, and my necromancer is dead," said the other cavalier. "Emotions are difficult right now. I do have a loaded revolver." "So what? We each swallow a bullet?" "It's an option," said Pyrrha, "and joke, and mostly." In the centre of that whirlpool, the tongues had breached. The 2 wrestling necromancers now faced each other and a panicked, delighted nest of wet pink tentacles. Spires of blood rose from the water as those grotesque, infernal muscles dissolved wholesale, sheared away, destroyed. But the Emperor was thrashing. One had wound around his leg, one of his hands was wrapped around Augustine's wrist, and one of Augustine's around his, as though in a parody of saving each other. Another tongue snaked upward toward Ianthe, and she sent a thin, whip-like flicker of blood to cut through that water. Augustine was gesturing. From this far away, it looked to me as though he were screaming, hopelessly, soundlessly, beyond speech, into the water. Maybe Ianthe could understand it. A tongue jerked him downward. He kicked it away, but as they shriveled, more joined their place. As he struggled, he somehow pushed the Emperor into a waiting, frenzied bed of the things, which wrapped around his legs, and the stoma sucked down. The Mithraeum went with it. I didn't see what happened before everything rolled. Pieces of the station broke off. I could see metal bouncing along the riverbed, then whole sections of station, then garbage, panels and mechanisms, pieces of hull, twisting down to join it. The huge, encompassing weight of the ship was slowly ploughing forward toward the hungry stoma. It caught on some rock face. I heard rushing water and snapping metal. That was enough.
fuck this, I said, Pyrrha said. Bullets? Water? Or waiting?
I'd had this choice before. The different deaths. The death of waiting. The death of optimism.
Harrow, the last time I chose to die, I died with your face the last thing I ever looked at.
Let me tell you a secret. It was easy to die thinking I wouldn't have to see you go. It was so easy to check out before you did. Now here I was, alone, holding your body hostage in a space station at the bottom of the river and getting sucked into some kind of heinous underworld that only opened for the undead souls of monstrous planets. I had the choice of shooting myself, being crushed by the water, or waiting to get squashed by tons of falling metal. Or I had the choice of living to get pulled down into hell. I wish I could say I was thinking about you.
Harrowhark, there was so much I wanted to tell you. I wish that on the edge of an ending bigger than I understood, that I was thinking about you. That the last word on your lips would be me saying your name, taken down to the dark heart of some world beyond. But my whole life and death had come crashing down around me. It turned out I was the child of God. Hey, suck it, Marshall. But also nothing more than a stick of dynamite. I was nothing but a chess move in a 1,000-year game. I mean, yeah, I was thinking about you too. If I could have turned that off, I would have turned it off years ago. But more importantly, I was absolutely fucking out of my mind, ninth house, big pissed off. As I dithered, Pyrrha sandblasted me with the calm, "Your mother would have picked the bullet." "Yes, well, jail for mother," I said. And taking a leaf out of your book, I thrust my sword into the whimpering plex. It gave. Both of us got knocked back flat on our asses by the gush of foaming, filthy, hideous water. I had to hit the deck, and that whole corridor deformed. It was like a popped balloon. The world went dark. I went under before I could take a breath. We bounced off about 20 surfaces, and as water closed up over our heads, the both of us made for the hole in the side of the ship. We squeezed through a narrowing, breaking tunnel and pushed through. And then we were out. I couldn't swim, but never fucking mind. I couldn't even tell if Pyrrha had been right about the breathing. It was like I had crux standing on my chest. Something hideous happened in your ears. We tumbled over and over and over in the water, and I thought for the first moment that it was really the end. I thought your eyeballs were about to burst in your head. But they didn't. And so I saw what happened as we rose from the wrecked body of that dying space station. High above the nest of tongues, Ianthe was poised as though flying, fluttering white flimsy in the heart of that vortex as God and Augustine thrashed together. The tongues had retracted almost to the rim of the mouth, and God was not winning. Those demoniacal tongues had him almost entirely in their grip as Augustine pinned him down. The tongues seemed more interested in the Emperor than in Augustine, though they weren't uninterested in Augustine. God's desperation, even in your darkening eyeballs, was clear. If Augustine wanted to free himself and get clear, he'd need to stop fighting. Or he could keep fighting, make sure the Stoma took the Emperor and be taken himself in the process. Above them both, the third option floated like a panicking butterfly. Ianthe could make the difference. If Augustine gave God a last good shove down into hell, and then Ianthe pulled him free of the tongues, they could probably both escape. I watched dimly as Ianthe lifted her hands. The current parted. The water flumed around her in thick, opaque curls, red with blood. The tongues lashed out all at once. I watched Ianthe dart down, rip the tongues from the Emperor of the Nine Houses, and wrestle him clear.
the tongues entwined in a bower to bear Augustine silently down to that ravenous mouth, to the hell where only demons went. Which was Tridentarius all over. She got one choice, and not only did she blow it, but she blew it in such a huge fucking spectacular way that you would have been impressed had you not hated her for it. Ianthe, throwing in her lot with the guy who had lied to everyone about everything. Ianthe, backstabbing her own cavalier all over again. Ianthe, with the world in the balance, reaching her hand out and pressing down on the weight marked bad. She surged out of sight, covered and hidden by a blast of water. The tongues retracted and the teeth folded up to close that chewing great void. Then the pressure closed its hands around your wrists and your chest pounded inward.
Harahark, did you know that if you die by drowning, apparently your whole life flashes in front of your eyes? I didn't know, as I died and took you along with me, having kept you alive for, what, a whole 2 hours, whether it was going to show me both. Like, at the end of everything, if it was going to be you and me, layered over each other, as we always were, a final blurring of the edges between us, like water spilt over ink outlines. Melted steel. Mingled blood. Harrowhark and Gideon. Gideon and Harrowhark at last. But as everything went black, and I died the second time round, I didn't see you. I didn't even see me. The final thing I saw was a great sunshiny light. A blurred figure hazing in and out around the edges. At first, it looked to me like a woman. A grey-faced, dead-eyed woman, with a face so beautiful it almost went out the other side and became repellent. A woman with my eyes, dimmed dark yellow in death, whose hair fell in wet leaden hanks. I realised with exhausted indignation that, at the end of everything, after all I had been through, after the last word, the last strike, the last drop of blood in the water, your bullshit dead girlfriend had come to claim you. And she said, in the wrong voice, twice removed, "Chest compressions. I know her sternum shattered. Ignore it. We need that heart pumping. On my mark." Hands pressed. We died.